we're sitting down with Chris Hefner, coach and trainer at Franklin Strength, talking about just social media. Social media as it applies to fitness and if it even applies. So, Chris, what's going on? Great to have you back.
Hey, great to be back, Ray. I'm excited to talk about social media today, how it influences essentially our clientele, but then also just people all around the world, including ourselves. So let's get to it, brother.
Right on. So I guess, you know, the first thing is there's a lot of commentary. Like if you look at, pick a social media platform, there's always memes and jokes about people on their phones at the gym. And I kind of see that there are both negatives and positives to that. Would you agree? Which is,
yeah,
somebody being on the phone.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. As far as there's some pros and cons to that, because, like, you know, in your scenario, for example, like you train alone by yourself, right? And sometimes you might be following one of your programs that you've written, and you might be utilizing your phone to access that program to pull up coach notes and all this stuff, right? So it makes sense in your scenario.
Right.
But then there's people on the other hand that are using their phones just as a regular cellular device during their workout. So they're just completely just, you know, not all in on their workout. So that's definitely a deterring, you know, aspect of actually being in the gym. What they're supposed to be doing is training, but they're kind of distracted on their phone while they're there.
Now, what about in the case of training for strength, which is kind of your bread and butter? It's what you do with a lot of your clients. And when you're looking at that 3 to 5 minutes between sets, what else are you going to do for 5 minutes between sets?
Yeah, that's a good point. So we train novices, right? So we get novices, they come in, we train them strong. They're not power lifters, but we get them generally strong. And usually their rest periods will be about 3 minutes long initially when they're first starting off. And that's on their working sets. So let's say they're doing 3 sets of 5 of a certain lift, right? They might be resting 3, 4 minutes, 5 at the most in between sets. So literally you're looking at 3 sets that you've got to actually think about what they have to do during that time in which they're not lifting the weight, which, you know, it's hard for some to kind of get accustomed to that. You figure it out really nicely how to kind of multitask during that that rest time. But a lot of our people, man, it's just a good time for them to, like, you know, maybe take notes in their training journal, get a sip of water, chat a little bit, think about their next lift, how they're going to execute, and then go from there. It's really not that big of a deal. But if they're training, let's say they were training by themselves, not in an environment where they're being coached, well, then they might go in and record some notes down for their coach so that they can view for their next session, something along those lines. So, yeah.
So they wouldn't be answering emails like I do with a long rest interval. So that's where you're going?
You do a great job at multitasking. So you're resting during your heavy set, and you're blasting off emails, shooting some texts out to clients, doing what you got to do, and you're making the most out of your time. But it is beneficial for a lot of people to just disconnect 100% from their phone during their training time.
So even along these lines, when we had our brick and mortar commercial gym and in training facility, I had at one point, and this was years ago, so it really was cutting edge. I think I had bought 9 iPads, and we moved and digitized all of our training clients to a digital format. And then every coach or trainer, when they're working with, whether it was one-on-one or small group or large group as it might be, everything was being recorded and done on that iPad. And we actually found for the large group, no issue because we weren't recording individual things. Small group, not a huge issue. But for those one-on-ones, it was so cumbersome to be using a digital tablet to record and manage the workouts that we ended up going back to pen and paper. And I even reached out to some of our former coaches that worked for us that were functioning as strength coaches, some of them head strength coaches in Division I athletics. And I said, how are you guys doing this? And even they weren't using the technology even if you're not using it to screw off, it just became such an inefficient distraction from what you were supposed to be doing during the workout that they went back to you know, what was described as pigeonholes in pen and paper. And every athlete, every football player would record his workout and he'd go in the pigeonhole and the coaches would go by and review it later. So it's kind of, I think using the pen and paper, like you said, having a training log, training book is probably the better way to do it. In fact, my workouts still get written in a spiral notebook. Even if I'm grabbing something off of my mobile device in my training app, I'm still going to use pen and paper.
Right. Yeah, we use those little, like, those tiny little notebooks for our clients, and it seems to work well. But we've also found a good balance as far as, like, okay, you could track every set, every weight, every exercise for, you know, for every single workout. But what we've gotten accustomed to with them is tracking our main lifts, and then for our accessory movements, if they'd like to track them, that's fine, right? But we're not going to require it. And we're going to push those accessory lifts close to failure, right? So we just try to keep it simple. We're trying to, like, not stress them out about writing every single thing down. Now, I've seen people who write every single thing down, and they make a lot of progress that way, which is great. But sometimes people, including myself, just need to, like, just go and train and not stress about every single detail, writing every single thing down, because sometimes it's going to be good for the soul, you know?
Right. Agreed. Now, another factor with the social media and its impact on fitness and in the gym space or whatever you want to call it is the social media platforms, whether it's Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Snap, Facebook, whatever. What do you see as some of the negatives with social media and the role it plays with people in the fitness space?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess let me start off by saying, like, right now we're on a social media platform and we're in the fitness space, and I'd like to think that we're a couple strong voices in the fitness space that we can present all sides, like we're doing right now regarding, you know, social media and how it influences people. Like, you know, as far as some of the negatives go, I mean, we could talk about that for literally 3 hours straight, and you know, you and I have had conversations about that, but yeah, there's a lot of positives, and we're going to get to a lot of those today. But as far as negatives go, man, like, it's really tough to, there's so much information out there for these people, right? Including us. So, like, you go in, let's just use Instagram for our example, and people start viewing different clips on Instagram, different photos, and then their algorithm starts to really dial it into what they think that they want to see. And then they start picking up information from that platform or whoever they're following, or people that are popping up, and man, they start, like, listening to every single person because they think that just because someone's on social media, they think that they are a, I don't know how you describe it, like a person to be trusted, in the field. And that person could have zero training experience working with actual clients. They might be, you know, 25 years old and they just have a great body and they do some stupid stuff in the gym. But people will follow that just because of, hey man, these guys got a presence, they've got a following, and they look good, so they must know what they're talking about, right? I'm sure you've seen a lot of the same stuff.
Yeah, I think that's probably the largest negative with the social platforms as they pertain to fitness is there are a lot of people, and I see this, I promote 2 bodybuilding contests a year, have since 2005. I think to date we promoted 37 events. I'll see first-time competitors step off our contest stage on Saturday, and on Monday, I'll see a post from them on social media saying that they're now accepting clients as a coach and a trainer online. And it's not to say that in each case, you know, some of those folks don't have any experience, don't have any credentials, all of those things, that some of them are not experts. There certainly are some, but the overwhelming majority just happen to look good in a bathing suit. And that doesn't necessarily correlate to providing good information, safe information, proper training technique, the right way to manage your nutrition. And, you know, an example of that is that's why we see a lot of folks going into physique contests eating white fish, which, you know, whiting, orange roughy, things of that, tilapia, a 4 ounce serving is 100 calories, 25 grams of protein, no carbs, no fat. You'll see individuals eating nothing but white fish and green beans or asparagus. And it's because what the last person that looked good in a bathing suit was eating. Now you contrast that to what's being done right by somebody that maybe has some experience, not in all cases, but they might be eating, you know, 2,500 calories 10 days out from the event, whereas that green bean and whitefish person is probably eating like 800 calories a day. But again, if somebody looks good and they got a following on social media, it's misunderstood as they're an expert and they know what they're talking about.
Yeah, for sure. And also, like we mentioned the the looking good thing, like a lot of the times, a lot of these social media influencers or whatever you want to call them nowadays, these content producers, like a lot of the times they will diet down for a, maybe not necessarily a bodybuilding show, but for a photo shoot or some sort of content creating, you know, opportunity in their life, right? And they'll take all these pictures and videos while they're shredded up and looking great, the best they've ever looked, super tan, just dialed in, and they might get a lot of content created, but then, you know, that's for that specific reason. They'll go back to kind of how they look in the off season, just throughout the course of the year now. But now when we view their content, you know, they're just ripped up. They look amazing. Their hamstrings are dialed in. They got awesome glutes and quads, right? So it's like, oh, this is how I want to look all the time, right? And this is how they must look all the time as well. So I'm going to listen to their advice.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I remind clients of that. Like if we do contest prep right, and this is the easiest one to cherry pick because the goal is to look amazing on stage in a bathing suit. And if we do the contest prep right, it's like climbing a 10-story building. The day of the contest, we're on the 10th floor. A few weeks out, we're on the 7th floor. And if we've done it right, as I said, after the contest, we can stay on the 7th floor. And if we look at most of the content creators, most of the influencers, they only share video, still images, whatever on social when they look like they're about stage ready, if not stage ready. Or to your point, yeah, it's, you know, I know this because I do this for the consulting I do. Even this podcast, webcast, if we shoot about an hour of content, I can turn that into 30 to 45, 30 to 60 second clips. So if you look at somebody that diets down for a shoot to create content, if they shoot at like 2 hours of video, they could have 60 to 90 pieces of content that they could use for months on end. And once you've done that a couple times, you really get to the point where you almost never have to shoot content again. And that's what they put out there because they don't put the video, the picture when they don't have abs out there. They don't put, you know, when they start their training cycle, if they're looking to max their squat or their deadlift, they're not going to put week one's training weights, right? Even if they train to failure, they do a one rep max, they do a heavy single. Let's say that's in the squat. It's only 500 pounds. They're not going to share that. They're going to share it when they do 590, right? So, and it gives the person consuming the content a false sense of what's real. It's like, yo, man, they didn't start out with an almost 600 pound squat. In fact, they didn't even have a 500 pound squat. They didn't start out with a six pack. You know, they started out with a spare tire.
Yeah. And they're not, you know, they're not seeing the years of work that a lot of these people are putting in. Whether they're, you know, whether they're drug free or not, right? So a lot of these, a lot of my male clients come to me and they're like, dude, is this possible for me? And I'll look at them. I'll be like, I don't know. We'll see in about 20 years and in hardcore training and, you know, eating really well. But I was like, dude, I tell them, I try to be very upfront. I'm a very just normal looking guy, genetics wise, right? But I'm a very good coach as far as like movement goes, training goes, and I'm a thinker. So like, you know, I talk to them, like, okay, let's think about this. And, you know, we talk about, hey, a lot of these guys are using drugs for at least part of their time while they're building this beat. And, you know, that's that's something that I'm not encouraging my clients to do, right? So it's like, hey, you're probably not going to look like this one day, but that doesn't mean we can't get strong as hell and look good naked, right? And also feel good. So you just got to kind of bring people back down to reality, especially if they do want to stay drug-free, which is my hope for most people.
Yeah, and that's another issue is an unrealistic timetable, right? It takes years of consistent exercise and consistently eating congruent with your goals to achieve an impressive physique. And that being said, for a lot of individuals in street clothes, you wouldn't even hardly know that they have an impressive physique unless they have their shirt off, they're in a bathing suit or whatever. They might look like they might appear athletic, but that's probably going to be the extent of it.
Yeah, for sure. And I just realized that I'm drinking caffeine right now, and it's a drug, so I apologize for it.
That's fine. I might be drinking. I don't know what's in this.
What do you got?
Olipop, ginger lemon.
Sounds good.
Something new. It tastes good. Low calorie, tastes good. It's carbonated. Life's good. Whatever. But no, I think that training time is huge. You know, you have, like, if you get a training client, how long is the average client working with you guys in your facility?
About 2 years. Because and we're trying to push it so that lasts a little bit longer, you know, maybe 3 years. But like, we realize that, you know, strength training and getting strong and building muscle is a hard task, right? And it's sometimes not enjoyable. So if we can keep a client for two plus years, that's a good, we did a good job. It'd be nice to be able to keep them longer, but sometimes people are looking for the new hot thing they can do with their, the new flash in the pan, you know, some people are just looking for something new for a while. Literally yesterday, I had 3 clients that I used to train, got them really dialed in, strong as hell, they looked great. 3 people yesterday that I talked to are all coming back, and they haven't trained with me for over a year and a half, but they're all coming back in the next week because they want to get back to it. So it's just part of the game, and I've learned to not stress about people coming and going, because it's just, you know, it's just part of life. It's not anything about me as a person. You know, at first, you know, when that used to happen to people used to leave, I used to get kind of bent out of shape because, you know, I give everything I have, but I realize that people just come and go, and it's part of life. You know?
Well, that too, you know, the social media will highlight the new shiny object, the new flash in the pan, and people will look at it, and then they'll look at the people doing it, and it could be a brand new shiny object, right? And they'll look at the person doing it, and remember, it's a new shiny object, so the person looks that way, and they probably looked that way before the new shiny objects. The new shiny object's new, but they'll jump ship and go over there. But on the flip side is, with social media, if you're doing your job as a good business and you're staying top of mind and you're providing value, they're going to keep seeing that too. And that social media can pull those people back to the experts, back to the people that have the experience that can really help them out. And I think you just proved that.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And a lot of the times you'll see like new things that pop up, and it does seem interesting to some people for whatever reason. For example, I went out to lunch yesterday with an old friend, and it was like right next door to this like bougie little, like, I don't even know what it was, man. People were in there just wearing like booty bands and like doing some sort of weird shit in there, and they're wearing cute clothes or whatever. So I'm like, oh, I can see how that's appealing for people. They want to go in there, but like at the end of the day, those people that want to create a physique and some strength that they can carry on for the rest of their lives, well, they're probably going to end up coming back to what they know has been the most beneficial for them, and that's strength training and lifting weights in general. So, and you know, so it's all good. Like people come and go, and you know,
it's just normal.
Yeah, for sure. And then the social media really does. Some of these social media platforms, they do a real good job at highlighting some stuff that might not necessarily be that beneficial for people, but it looks cool, right? It looks interesting for people. Maybe that's a new social outlet for them that they can engage in. So, you know, they see it online, like, hey, I'll give it a shot, even though it might not be the best thing for me, for my fitness and longevity.
Even even with the certain movements, so certain exercises that look absurd. They look like things that someone's never seen before, and then they take a look at the person doing it, and it's kind of like, geez, I don't look like that because I'm not doing what they're doing, so I'm going to try doing what they're doing because that must be the missing secret ingredient. And that's everything from like we've talked about this before, squatting on a BOSU ball or a stability ball. Nobody should do that. Yeah, there's tremendous benefit to training balance, but that's also a good way to fall and get hurt, especially if you're putting a loaded barbell on your back. I mean, it borders on stupid.
And we can train balance by just squatting with your feet on the floor, right?
Right. There's plenty of other ways you can train balance without introducing the potential for an accident and ending up with a sprain or a broken bone. Another one is the I'll cherry pick like dumbbell tricep kickbacks. Right? That ends up showing up, and it's like, well, that most people are gonna use a weight that they can hold their elbow up with. That's gonna maximally challenge the tricep. Yet you'll see the fitness influencers doing that in their videos. So then you'll get the people that want to do it. And like for the average, say middle-aged female, she's probably only going to be able to do kickbacks with 12-pound dumbbells. It's not really going to challenge the triceps.
Right. And that's a problem with social media, because we do see a lot of these exercises that people see. Well, they look cool online, right? So people are like, oh, they look cool, so they must be beneficial, which some of them probably are beneficial, right? I've done some movements I've seen online that I've kept in my routine, for example, like barbell hip thrust. I've been doing those for probably 5 years now. But like, there's a lot of stuff on there, like you mentioned, the BOSU ball or a bunch of other wacky stuff out there. Now you start to see it pop up more in commercial gyms, and I'm even starting to see, like, once in a while, I'll pop over in the YMCA in Brentwood. If I've got a little downtime, I'll go get a workout there, just kind of change up my scenery. And I'll see some of the trainers there who clearly don't know what the hell they're doing, but they'll be doing something that they probably saw online that morning with their client with no rhyme or reason, right? There's no way that they're going to continually use that movement and try to progress on it and get these people better. But, you know, that's just something that we've got to battle with as, like, professional coaches and trainers, you know, because these people that we work with, they also see this stuff going on. They see these things online, so then they ask us about them, and they show us these videos, and then we've kind of got to make sure that we've got a good response for why are we not using these, or why are we these certain movements in our routine.
Right. And that's, I mean, I think that's always my thing, and I'll have clients message me a link to somebody on Instagram or TikTok doing something. I'm like, yeah, don't do that. And their first comment is, well, look what they look like. And I'm like, yeah, that they didn't build that physique doing that craziness in the video. Another one, I had a female competitor client. She sent me this thing where somebody had shared photos of their abs. They're getting ready to compete. Another female, and they're fat loading during peak week instead of loading carbohydrates, which is what most people will do. And we don't need to get into specifics of peak week, because not everybody that will ever listen to this is interested in competing. But the fat loading seems to show up around 20 years ago, because 20 years ago, there were one or two trainers, coaches on internet discussion boards pushing loading with saturated fat the week of a contest, but it didn't stick around. It didn't get traction. It's not what the masses started doing because, well, it doesn't work. But my client sent me that and asked, and I walked her through, and I told her, and she knew one of the influencers, and I said, yeah, he was pushing that. And she's like, oh, and she said, well, that's why I have you, to show you stuff like this and say, should I be doing this, or what's the deal here? But, and she said, she goes, I have no idea to validate this. Is this true? Does this work? Should I be doing this?
Yeah.
Like, look at the woman in the picture. Her abs look amazing. Right? So,
yes.
And she said, she's like, I rely on you.
Yeah. So, like, but only a certain amount of people can rely on us as filters, right? Because, you know, we can only have so many clients and help so many people.
Right.
So, like, people have to learn to kind of weed out the bullshit because there's so much of it out there. And you've got to, as far as, like, our listeners today, like, people probably can do a pretty decent job at it, but they've got to find some people that they know, like, and trust that they can, you know, rely on for good quality information. Because there's some, like, I don't know if you've got some off the top of your head examples, but, like, there's some people that I really trust in the training kind of realm. And I could go on, you know, a couple handfuls of people and talk about them. But there's one guy, his name's Andy Baker. And Andy Baker is, he's a trainer out of Kingwood, Texas. And he's helped write some books with Mark Ripto and stuff like that. He's done a lot of his own stuff as well, but he's a very successful trainer and he helps people, right, get strong, but not doing silly stuff along the way. And I've learned some things that I've seen from him and read in his programs that I've purchased and stuff. But, like, dude, there's certain things out there that, like, man, this guy, like, he really knows what he's doing because he's worked with people for 30 or whatever it is, 25 years, you know. But then you can easily look at another account right next to his and see that this, let's say it's a female trainer, right? And I've heard this example from you before. Let's say she's 22 years old. She looks great, right? But she's a size 2. But she'll probably always be a size 2 no matter what type of training and diet she follows, right? Because she's got great genetics, right? But people and women especially will see this girl in the size 2 and they're like, oh, well, whatever she's doing must be the way to go because she, you know, she looks great and that's exactly how I want to look, even though I'm a 38-year-old woman that wants to get into training, right? Probably... is that kind of along the reference you've been, I've heard you say before?
Yeah. You know, there's, and that's probably the best example is there's a lot of young females and I'm not saying all young females don't have a background. Like I've had clients on my business consulting side. Like one of them is currently a Division I female strength coach. So she's an anomaly because that field is dominated by males. It is what it is. I don't make the rules. That's the way it is. She's really good at what she does. She's amazing at what she does. I had another female coach work for me that today has her doctor of physical therapy. I paid her to come to one of the gyms I consult for and teach my kids the proper movement mechanics of the Olympic lifts and the Olympic hybrids. So those people exist that are young in their 20s and actually have an academic background, actually have a lifting and academic background, actually have some certifications. Certifications aren't everything. But the overwhelming majority of the fitness influencers look good in a bathing suit, and the majority of them looked good in a bathing suit before they picked up a barbell or dumbbell. They've always, you know, if they were a size 2 at age 17, and they didn't play sports, they didn't lift weights, maybe they did cheerleading or dance, and they were a size 2 when they graduated college at age 22, and at age 25, they've been lifting weights for a year, and they're a size 2, well, I've got news for you. They've been a size 2 for the last 7 years. So they've always been a size 2. Now, does that mean they don't know what they're talking about? No. But it probably means they don't know what they're talking about, and they probably look that way because that's just how they look.
No matter how they train, right?
Correct. In today, like when I look at young people that want to become coaches and trainers, and the easiest place to do that, and we talk about, okay, where? Well, it's online, but a lot of them have no experience working with people one-on-one. In that one-on-one experience on the floor in a training facility teaches you a lot. You know, when I look back at having done like 45, 50 hours a week for weeks on end of one-on-one training, with a diverse population, right? Everybody from a guy that was in his 70s at the time, 6'3", 6'4", couple biscuits under 300 pounds, played on U of I's only undefeated football team, played in the first televised Rose Bowl, and now he's, you know, approaching 80. He doesn't move so well, had knee surgeries in the 50s. Somebody like that to an NFL football player to a high school girl that is overweight and her grandparents are helping her try and become healthy and lose weight. When you work with a diverse group of people like that one-on-one, you learn a lot. And a lot of these people that are just doing the online coaching and training that, you know, are a size 2 or size 0 or whatever it might be, they don't have that experience.
Right. Yeah, it's invaluable. I mean, just working with that, because that's how you get good at coaching. But, you know, that kind of leads into like, okay, so social media can also motivate people, though, to get started with a fitness routine, which is huge. So, like, I've got, I train a lot of women that are, like, in their 50s and 60s, you know? So they'll come to me, and they'll come to me because they were motivated, because not necessarily maybe what they saw on our social media, but they saw something that, some sort of influencer that's around their age. And they see a similar female in their 50s or 60s doing this stuff, lifting the weights. And then that's what kind of motivated them to kind of get off their ass and get training and hire a coach so that they actually get started, right? So it does, social media definitely does help us out in our field for sure. Especially when it comes to like motivating people, because I'm not like, I could care less as far about social media. I'm not post, you know, we post for our fitness studio, you know, a lot of helpful information, but I don't have my own platform that I'm posting on daily. I don't care about that stuff. It doesn't really motivate me as far as like, you know, the kind of type of person I am, but like some people that see the stuff that they're seeing online, it really does encourage them to get going. So it's definitely a huge contributing factor for people these days, because everybody's got a smartphone. Most people do anyways. I wish I didn't. I wish I had a flip phone, but that's another discussion we can have.
Well,
if I do ever get a flip phone, you'll probably be one of the 5 numbers on there.
Perfect. I appreciate that. Yeah, there's upside to it, and it, you know, it shows people what's possible. Like I just cut 2 hours, like I said earlier, I just took 2 hours worth of webcast podcast that I've done with the first time almost 71-year-old female bikini competitor, and the second time we shot, she was 72. So I just took those 2 hours and cut them into about 50 pieces of content. And her story is awesome. She had a L5 SI fusion of her spine at age 58 after she was released by her orthopedic surgeon to, you know, she did surgery, did her physical therapy, her rehab. She was released to do whatever she wanted. The surgeon suggested she hire a trainer. She did. And then at age 61, started considering doing a bikini contest. Well, you know, not that the bikini contest is for everybody, but if you look at her in a bathing suit, she looks decades younger than she is. Okay, well, that's very vain. Yeah, you bet it is. But you know what else? She lives life on her terms. She doesn't live like somebody that is over the age of 70. She doesn't live like somebody over the age of 50. She leads an incredibly active life because she takes care of herself. So people seeing that, it's motivating. People seeing that, it's inspiring. People seeing that are sitting there saying, well, geez, I'm 61, she's 72. Well, shoot, what could I be doing? So there's definitely an upside to the social media.
Yeah, for sure. I wish that more people her age would, you know, get motivated and get off their butts. You know, people that I know in my life, family members and so forth, that aren't necessarily the most physically active people. I wish they would, but like, you know, it is when they start training, they realize that, hey, man, this is not an easy task, right? When you go and strength train, or lift weights in general, it's not easy. I mean, I'm about to go do it after our podcast here, and like, I know it's gonna be a challenging hour of my day, but it's gonna be the best hour of my day. It's gonna make the rest of my day just that much better. Yeah, for sure. And it's gonna, you know, as far as training goes, man, like, this is what, when people start actually doing it routinely, let's say two or three times a week, right? Maybe even four times a week, like, it just becomes part of their life, and then they'll never turn back generally. Some people, like I mentioned earlier, some of our clients, they'll stop training altogether. And I feel like a failure at times, but if they come back around and they get back into it, it's a win in my book. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's hard to, you know, I'm not trying to control people. I can only lead them to what I think is the best route for them to take, but they've got to be the ones to pick up the weights and put down the weights and execute, you know?
Right. And it's hard, but again, social media shows that it's doable. And like, I'm not going to name any names. Everybody knows who they are. There's a number of former individuals in the military, some of them that were special forces, and everybody oohs and ahs over the workouts. And it's like, look, they're proving it's possible. And it's yes, like to your point, yes, you might have 45 or 60 minutes, 4 or 5 days a week that are challenging, but that's it. Anybody can do this. Like, you may not go and run an ultra marathon. You may not, you know, if you're 50 some years old, you're not going to be a Navy SEAL. It's not in the cards. But I mean, at minimum, you're too old. Like, they're not taking it. Oh, but that being said, like, there's nothing those influencers are doing in that hour of exercise that you couldn't do. Like, you may not squat the same weight. You may not be able to run the same distance today, but you could still squat and you could still run. And that too, you know, is a takeaway that I think people can look at what those influencers do a bit differently. Instead of looking at, oh, that guy's a badass. Oh, forget that. Like, he's not doing anything special. Not at this point in his life. In the military, separate conversation. The dude just goes to the gym and moves some weight. We can all do that.
Yeah, it's just going to all be scaled to our current strength.
Current ability. Right?
Yeah, and as long as people can be okay with that and not be, you know, kind of, if they can leave their ego at the door when they walk into the gym and do what they're able to and do it well, and hopefully have some sort of guiding force behind that, whether a coach or some sort of book or app that'll help them out. I mean, that's huge. But, you know, if you're expecting to start when you're 55 years old, then you're expecting, you know, you're not going to go in and you're not going to walk in and bench press 225 for a set of 10. It's not going to happen. Sorry. Unless you're a 500-pound guy and you just got a lot of mass, you know?
Yeah, most people, it's out of the question. But it's out of the question today, and it is part of the question and part of the discussion maybe in 45 days, 60 days, yeah. 90 days. And that's what I think social media could do a better job of doing is showing, you know, that these things are possible, but at the same time, it's I always use the MTV Cribs TV program from a while back. Like, they, they're not showing the struggling artist. They're showing the artist that sold a million records, you know, just like the bodybuilding competitor. And I deal with this with clients. They look at pictures on social media of people the day of the contest. And it's like, listen, you're 10 weeks away from your day on stage, the day of the contest for you. Like, you can't compare yourself at 2.5 months away from the event, looking at them the day of the event. Like, you need to compare yourself to that competitor 2.5 months out. But that timeline in the time it takes is just completely lost, because you only see the finished product. Or you only see real close to the finished product. And a lot of the, and I see this because of the contest promotion I do, a lot of competitors, and we've had over 3,000 unique competitors cross my stage. And many of them are friends with me on social media on one platform or another, my contest page, whatever. And I see them. They only show up on social media when they're in shape. And it could be 2 years where they don't share a thing. And then all of a sudden they got abs and they're on there every day.
I have seen some accounts out there that do show some pretty updated progress throughout the course of, let's say, a year's time, right? Which is cool to see, because if someone's going through a physique transformation, and they're doing it naturally, right? You'll see hey man, you can change your physique over time, right? But it does take time, and the amount of change that's happening is very small, right? Each individual day leading up to the end of that year's time. But I have seen some people do that, but in any other, it's just in any other thing in life, you've got to put in the work. And you mentioned, sometimes these people will be working on something for years and years and years, but then we might only see the end product of it. So yes. an example would be in songwriting, right? I've got some friends that are songwriters around here. And I was out to lunch with a guy recently, a good friend of mine. And I asked him about this new song that came out recently. It was with Kenny Chesney. And so I'm like, tell me about that. He's like, dude, we wrote it in 2018. I'm like, it's, dude, 6 years. So they wrote this song and it kind of went through, whatever. And 6 years later, it's finally out, right? So imagine if people took their health and their fitness, kind of more like that, okay, this is a lifetime investment here. It's not going to be, I'm not going to be my peak, my best after 1 year of training, right? So it's an investment that I'm going to, seek the reward of over the course of my lifetime. And it might be 6 years later where I'm like, oh, dude, my physique looks pretty good now, So it's definitely comparable to that. Yeah.
Even I use this with competitors that want to step on the physique stage. Everybody wants to spend their money and their best effort on quote unquote contest prep. But the best return on their effort for their money is the off season. And everybody always pushes back and it's like, well, listen, I'm like, if you look at collegiate athletics, and I know this because I have a handful of my former coaches and trainers that work as college strength coaches. And one of them is a top dog at a large school. That coach runs the strength and conditioning program, period. That all of their time spent with the football players is in the off season. They spend the least amount of time with the football players during the season. Now, what games are on television on Saturdays? Well, the in-season games. Are they covering football in the off season? Not at all. So these athletes that play college football, they show up mid late August and ready to go, ready to play, and that's what's covered. But that period of time from, depending on if they go to bowl games or not, that January until first week of August is never talked about. But that's the meat and potatoes. That's when all the work is done to produce the athletes and the team that can play football at a high level at the end of August. It's just like that Kenny Chesney song that somebody wrote in 2018 that is finally being recorded and covered and on an album and on the radio and on Pandora. And I mean, at the time we're recording this, I know Kenny's currently touring, so he's probably singing that song. 6 years.
It's pretty incredible. So as far as contest prep goes, not to make it all about that, but for example, you obviously help people with contest prep. And typically your preps are around 20 weeks, right? So
yes.
Are you starting to help or see more of some of your clients reaching out for help in the off season then per se? So almost like a coaching experience throughout the course of the year or what?
Yes. In fact, I tell competitors that if we prep and they get on stage and they're done, I'll get them set up to come out of the contest prep phase, if you will. Now, most of my clients aren't starving. I mean, I just had a male drug-tested, drug-free competitor, first contest. He was eating 2,400 calories 2 weeks before the contest. The week of the 10 days out from the contest, he was eating 2,400 calories. The week of the contest, he was eating a lot more than that. He did zero cardio. None. But I gave him some basic parameters to go and start increasing his food. Now, when I started his prep, Okay, and that people's heads are going to spin with this. But when I started his contest prep, he's eating 5,000 calories a day. So in I didn't have an off season with him, right? But the off season is where you make improvements. The off season is where you have the opportunity to have a caloric surplus. And in that caloric surplus is the raw materials to increase muscle mass. Additionally, if we raise calories when we start our prep, we're at a much higher point. I have a male competitor, drug-free, early 50s, hired me about 6-7 months ago now. Initially, he was going to do prep and wanted to compete 5 months later. That changed, and he said, I want to push it out like another 6 months. I said, great. So we're going to, and he decided that early on in that first 20 weeks. So I said, great, we're going to increase your calories. So without pulling up all his notes, he started out like, say 168 pounds and eating like 1800 calories because he actually is a coach and a trainer. Okay. So he has a background in that. I took all of his cardio away and gradually increased his calories. And today he's eating 3,500 calories and like, he's like 168 pounds. So, so we're going to start and we're starting to look at, cause he's going to compete early fall. We're starting to decrease things. I have a female competitor, early middle age, 3 kids, married, okay, not 21 years old. She's doing no cardio, lifting weights 4 or 5 days a week for around 40, 45 minutes. Most of the workouts she does at home. So she has a basic strength setup, right? So rack, barbell, bumper plates, some kettlebells, adjustable dumbbells, whatever. But she doesn't have no machines at home. She's like 124 pounds. And she's currently eating 2,200 calories, has abs, and next week we're going up to 2,400. When I started with her, we were at like 1,600, 1,800 calories, and she's the same weight, which means she's lost body fat and gained muscle mass. And we're going to keep doing that. She's going to compete in the fall, and then we're going to make an adjustment and go the other way. But all of that, like, you can't do that outside of the off season. It's just not, you can't do those things. Like, you're not going to correct metabolism, increase calories so that when you are prepping and dieting, you're eating, you're starting at a higher standpoint. And as you take away, you're not eating so little. But off seasons where, in again, it's no different than every ball sport. It's no different than pro sport. For basketball, football, baseball, volleyball, soccer, it's no different than collegiate sports. It's no different than high school sports. You know, they have dedicated off seasons that get them ready for the games.
And I do appreciate when I see that kind of stuff, though, on social media, like talking about, because a lot of people, as you know, a lot of people come in and they're under-eating, right? A lot of people that we work with are under-eating. They're not eating close to where they need to be. As far as like, hey man, recovery goes and just general like life and building muscle and stuff like that. But sometimes on social media, which is definitely a big pro, I see some people, especially women, they will do some sort of, they'll do some consistent posts on like, hey man, this is like what one day of eating might look like. And it's going to show and help motivate people that they can consume more food, let's say in the off season or just in their regular life. Than they think they can. So it's cool to see people like, you know, you got these small women that are 140 pounds, but they're eating 2,500 calories a day, you know, and they're lifting weights and they're starting to show other women that, hey, this is possible to eat some more food. I might have to work up to that. I can't just go from 1,000 calories a day to 2,500 calories a day, but it is possible, even if it takes a while, right?
That's an opportunity with social media to do a better job as well. Like, I have 2 female clients. Like, most of my clients are competitors. 2 female, drug-free, drug-tested, 61 years of age. So, upper middle age. I would say today I consider that middle age, right?
Yeah.
They're both 110 to 114 pounds. And they're both... one of them I just raised to around 2,000 calories. The other one's up to 2,400 calories. No cardio. They've got abs. They're defined. They're strong. They're healthy. They look great in a bathing suit. They have great self-esteem, great self-confidence. But yeah, social media often paints a picture of everybody doing the opposite. Lots of cardio, no calories. I was contacted by a competitor, middle-aged, competing end of summer into this fall. So they're probably 2.5 months out from the first events, 3 months from the last of them, 3.5 months. They're already only eating around 1,200 calories, which means come August, they're going to be eating like 700 calories. And the body's not going to lose body fat. And that person has a coach. And I said, and I know their coach. I said, why are we talking? Like, you have a coach. And they said, well, we talked, client and current coach, and I want to work with you for my off season. And the reason for that is to get out of that common, what everybody hears on social media. And they're also doing an hour of cardio 6 days a week. So get out of that hour of cardio 6 days a week. Get out of only 1,200 calories. I mean, this individual is bigger than average for who they are. You know, our prep at this point, they would probably be at 1,800 or 900, if not 2,000 calories. Certainly wouldn't be doing cardio.
I just don't understand, like, how, you know, a lot of these, not like talking about like the cardio thing, you know, like whatever. So if people want to do cardio, it's great. But like, if you're allotting like so many hours per week for training, like what's actually sustainable for people, right? And what I'm finding is like, okay, you know, let's say 3 hours of training in the gym, right? Plus whatever they do outside of the gym, general physical activity, sport or walking, stuff like that, right? So it's a total of, you know, let's say like 5 or 6 hours of movement, right? And you're talking about like so many people are like being pushed to like do cardio 4 to 6 days a week for 30 to 60 minutes plus their strength training routine. It's like, dude, I don't understand how I've been doing this stuff for, you know, since I was a 17-year-old guy in high school. I've never had to do that to feel like I was being the best that I could be as far as fitness goes. And I don't understand where that comes from.
Social media. Because it's what gets shared. Seriously, it's what gets shared. You know, how many people that look good in a bathing suit are taking pictures of the readout on the treadmill, the step mill, the elliptical, the bike, for how long they were on it, how many miles they did, how many theoretical calories. By the way, the calorie readout on the piece of cardio is not accurate unless you have a heart rate monitor on that's talking to it. That's where it comes from. You know, I severed a relationship with a contest prep client at 4.5-5 weeks out from a contest. Like, they're competing this weekend. And a month ago, I said, I'm done. Because they took it upon themselves against my advice. They were, when I severed our relationship, they were doing cardio twice a day for almost an hour. I never said to do that. And it's because they were panicked at 10 weeks. Because at 10 weeks, they didn't look like somebody looked on stage. I'm like, you're not supposed to. Like, I've done this for 2.5 decades. Like, you are on track.
Yeah. I've been there too, where you kind of like get a little panicky, you know, maybe a month out, whatever. You're like, oh shit, I'm not as lean as I want to be. And then like, if you just follow the process and listen to your coach, you know, usually it'll end up turning out pretty good.
It'll work out. Right. But those things inevitably, I think a lot of it comes from social media. I think the order of events is, you have somebody that looks amazing in a bathing suit. They share that that's what they're doing. So everybody thinks, well, they look amazing. So if I do what they're doing, I'll look amazing. And then once you get enough of that, you have groupthink. Now you have everybody that is like, if you ask most people, what do you need to do to lose weight? They're going to say, don't eat carbs and do cardio. And that's like the opposite of what I tell everybody. Like, that's... And it's not long-term sustainable. And then back to tying this back again to social media and people that are entering the training and coaching space and sharing content, they don't have the wherewithal and experience. Like, I readily tell my clients, every joint on the human body is like the joints on an automobile. You know, on an automobile, around 35,000 miles, you're going to need a brake job. Around 40, 45,000 miles, you're going to need tires. At 80,000 miles, you need a timing chain or a timing belt. And at this many miles, you need shocks and struts. Stuff wears out. And if you're in your 50s and you're banging out 2 hours a day of cardio, you're going to start finding some joint pain in the knees, in the hips. And guess what? Because I've got clients in this space too. You know, the orthopedic joints have a shelf life in a human body of 2 years. And if you're too young, they can't do a joint replacement. You got to wait and live in pain. So there, all of that experience comes from somebody that has experience, has worked with a diverse population for many years, and that's often absent with the influencers on any of the social platforms. They've never worked with those people. They've never had conversations with orthopedic surgeons about knee replacement and the fact that, you know, you're going to get 20 years out of it. And if you're 42 and you need a knee, we're not going to do it. Because some of those orthopedic joints, they're one and done. You can't do a second one, at least not today. Technology is improving. That's another whole discussion. But anyways.
Yeah, who knows what it's going to be like in 30 years from now, you know? Like, if we ever need some sort of, you know, knee replacement or hip replacement, like, it might be completely different technology. So.
But today, but it's like, around 20 years. So you don't, like, if you go and put all of those miles on your body, it means you're going to need the brake job sooner. It means you're going to need tires sooner. Yeah. It means you know, and
that. Yeah, I get that. So where would we be then in the fitness space if, like, we didn't have social media at all? So, like, let's just say we just kind of erased it today. We didn't have any social media platforms around. Like, where would we be today then, like, as a culture, as far as, like, how we prioritize and execute on our physical fitness?
I think that invites a conversation about how did we arrive here? And if you go back probably to the 50s and 60s, maybe a little bit before that, there were people selling newsletters in magazines that typically had a supplement line and a home weight equipment line. So we'll cherry pick Weider, Joe Weider. He sold supplements, he sold magazines, and he sold home weight equipment. And he sold training courses. So, you know, we had paper magazines or paper newsletters, and we had conversations in the gyms. And that probably, you know, I would say that continued until the 70s. And then Pumping Iron came out, and it was put on film. So that, you know, that shared more information. That led to discussions into the 80s, more gyms. Many more magazines. Now it wasn't just a handful of weight equipment individuals selling magazines to push their weight equipment. Now there were way more magazines, way more supplement companies. The end of the 80s, we had TV shows on ESPN. There were workout shows. There were women's workout programs by women geared towards a female audience at, you know, mommy time, which was after the kids went to school for the day. And then in the 90s, the magazine started to evolve into discussion boards. The discussion boards became websites. And then the websites have now been replaced by social media. So there's always been something there. And, you know, 20 years ago, my competitor clients, I would tell them, take all your bodybuilding magazines, put them in boxes and put them on a closet shelf and don't look at them. Stop comparing yourself to people that are on stage or doing a photo shoot. Today I tell people stay off social media till after the contest. So I don't like where we would be. We'd be in the same spot, but the vehicle would be different. You know, if it's not a magazine, it was a discussion board, a website, now social media. And one day it won't be social media. It'll evolve. It'll be something else.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I was thinking about that while we were having this conversation. I'm like, man, because, you know, like what you kind of brought, alluded to, like some of the conversations just being had in the gym, like that was before people were all distracted on their phones and stuff. This is back when you owned your gym, and then even before that, you know, like when I first started training, like there was some value to that, like being in there with other people, putting in the work and having conversations about what's been working for them, what's been working for you, and then kind of like using that information to create something that's going to be beneficial for you as a human, right? And that's one of the things that I really do value as a human in this space, like just having conversations with people and seeing what other people are doing because there are some things that really do work. And some of those things are posted on social media. So we, you know, we can use that information and we can apply it to our daily lives and in our training methodology. So, like, you know, overall, at the end of the day, man, it's like, dude, these conversations, whether they're being held, you know, in person, you know, in a gym format or just through social media, I do think it's been largely beneficial. And, you know, maybe my caffeine is just kicking in right now, but, you know, like, when it comes down to it, dude, I mean, they are helping people, right, get better. Some of the information is bullshit. And if we can weed through the bullshit and help our friends and family and our clients kind of weed through it as well, I think we're going to be better off and we're going to continue to push forward.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, there's tremendous upside and opportunity. And there was for the, well, I guess I left books out, but and I'm looking at the bookshelf in my office that's loaded with weight training, strength training, nutrition, weight loss, diet, whatever books, right? So the opportunity for books, magazines, today's social media, the conversations in the gym is to show people what is possible and to share maybe some different ways of accomplishing what's possible. And then also provide that inspiration, provide, you know, like 72-year-old Renee Landers, provide that motivation, like, hey, look, I'm doing this at this age. You certainly can do it. You might even be able to do it better. But I think you have to be mindful of whose information are you consuming. You know, what is the backstory of the person? You know, do they have a backstory? You know, what were they doing 6 months ago? You know, if they just now have become a coach and trainer, like what's their backstory? What's the path that took them to get here? And is there information validated? Like, is it legitimate?
I think a lot of people that are successful through social media, whether that, you know, mean followers or some sort of sales of a product or a program, I think a lot of the people who are successful are figuring out like ways to actually help people, you know. I think a lot of the people that might not be truly good coaches, I don't necessarily think they're going to, you know, whether they might not make it in the long run, or they'll soon realize that, hey, man, maybe, well, this is my hope, that they realize that, hey, maybe this isn't for me and this isn't the space I could be in. But, you know, I think the people that are truly being effective coaches and trainers and influencers, I think the ones that are, you know, making this happen, make it work as far as career wise goes, I mean, I think they're some of the good ones, you know. And you know, we could talk about that for a long time. But well, I mentioned this in a whole another conversation you and I had. We there's this physical therapist out there, his name's Squat University on Instagram, and he's been one of the most like influential guys in my life as far as like getting quality information to help my clients then in return.
Yeah, and there's, you know, a lot of the people in this space today, you know, what were they doing 2 years ago, right? And then what are they doing today and what will they be doing in 2 years? And I can say from experience, because I've had dozens of coaches and trainers work for me, the shelf life of a coach or trainer is about 20 months. Most of the people that are sharing content have a full-time job. If they don't, they'll be going to get one because they're not very good at what they're doing. And part of the reason they're not good is some of the stuff we covered. There's other reasons that, you know, there's no business systems to help them grow their business. They know how to do the workout thing, but they don't know how to do the business thing. But most of them won't be doing this in 2 years. The data is clear on that. Like, the industry data is relatively clear. Now, you've been doing this. Like, how long have you been doing this?
I'm not a social media person at all. So let's just, you know, put that right down right there. I've been doing this for 16 plus years as far as like doing this as a profession. But
when did you quit your job?
Which job?
Teaching.
So while I was teaching, I was running a personal training business out of my garage gym, a wildly successful one in central Illinois. I had about 40 clients. And so I was teaching full time. I was personal training full time out of my garage gym, more or less. It felt like full time to me. So I've been doing this for a long time.
But standalone, like no teaching, just doing coaching and training. How many years?
Oh yeah, so like down here in Tennessee, I've been down here 5 years, and that's when I made the leap. I left education and I jumped into the personal training, just made it my full time gig because, you know, I realized that it wasn't sustainable to be teaching full time and then also running my own business, because it was a lot, you know, kind of burning the candles from both ends. But you know, I was younger then. I'm 38 now. I work probably like 35 hours a week, maybe right now, and maybe 40. But it's totally sustainable, and I love it. But I'm also not wasting time on social media as far as like trying to put out content and stuff like that. So I've got all this extra time to invest in my family and myself.
But that's the backstory. 16 years doing training, last 5 years training full time, probably the last 10 years. Really doing training full time, and maybe five of those 10 were also teaching full time, at least during the school year. But that's the backstory, and that's why, like, in 2 years, if you want to be coaching and training, you're gonna be, because the path is there, and it's a good path, and that's the path that for a lot of folks is absent. You know, I had a lady on social media. I was watching her following blow up. And to be honest with you, it's because she's middle-aged. It's what she looks like, and it's what she wears in the content. And I had asked her in conversation, I'm like, well, is this a side hustle? And she got all offended. And she's like, well, my clients, I have a full-time job too. My clients don't think what I do is a side hustle. And I'm like, this is a, you know, you're in a tiny bikini. And the bathing suits have only gotten smaller and smaller and smaller today. Like, this is like a year and a half ago when I had chatted with her about her business. But really, like, she has no experience in the fitness space. And she has a lot of followers, but she's not really providing enough value to make a living, which is why when I talked to her, she still had a full-time job.
Yep.
So, again, that's that backstory. And in your case, you've got the backstory.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, when I did teach for 6 years, though, making that jump to doing this full time, it was just one of those things where I had to make the jump and just go for it. You know, we've talked about that. Like, you know, a lot of these people in the fitness industry aren't doing it part time because they're afraid to make that jump, that complete leap, because, you know, you're putting a lot of faith in yourself on being able to make it. And like for me, I've got a family, I've got two houses. Like, dude, I have to make this work, right? I have to make this work. I have to serve my clients, and they have to make progress, because if I don't, I'm not gonna have two houses. I'm not gonna be able to provide for my family. So it's definitely a lot more. It's a lot different at this point in my life, where a lot of these people on social media probably are young, you know, 25-year-olds that they don't have a lot to lose if they do make the leap. They might go in. Yeah, they might. They might try it out. It might not work out for them. So what? Go find another job afterwards. You'll be fine.
Yeah, for a lot of them, it's money for a good time. You know, the money they make from this is their spending money. And they maintain a job. But no, I think, you know, I think social media has a lot of opportunity, just like books, just like magazines. And that's where I learned most of what I learned. And then and then eventually discussion boards, and I got connected with different people in the industry that I was able to be mentored by, even though in some cases they really weren't looking to be someone's mentor, but I would badger the daylights out of them to learn all that I could. So I think there's a lot of upside, but I think the take home point is just be mindful of, you know, the MTV Cribs. Like, it's not an overnight, you're not going to change your health and your physique overnight. Be mindful that, you know, if they're in their early 20s and they're a size 2, or even that being said, you know, if they're in their 50s or 40s and they just started training and coaching and they're a size 0, and they've further, you know, we're talking 3.5 decades since puberty started, they've always been a size 0. Well, do they know what they're talking about? Well, they might. But you need to remember that they looked that way 20 years ago, you know? So, and if you did, you know, if you're 50 and you were a size 9-10 at age 30, I mean, in fairness, if you're looking at that person, that's a 0. Well, I mean, let's be honest. 20 years ago, you weren't a zero. They were.
Yeah, I think kind of one more closing thought is like a lot of times people are seeing a lot of things come in, you know, on their feed, and like they think that they get overwhelmed by so many things that they think they need to make a change on, right? But when it comes down to it, like they've got to pick a handful of things they're going to focus on and not try to change everything at once. Let's say that's add strength training in 3 times a week, right? Maybe start there, and then as they progress and get that as part of the routine, then they can add an additional thing. They don't need to take all 50 things that they're seeing coming in through their feed and make all those changes at once, because it can get overwhelming. I mean, you know, let's say I go on our gym's Instagram and I look at the feed, like, dude, there's a lot of good advice out there. There's a lot of bullshit advice out there, but I can see how people can get overwhelmed with all the different advice out there for people.
And real quick, you can end up overwhelmed, and that's why, like, I would always tell the competitors, like, just don't keep consuming the social media right now. Like, you're going to be overwhelmed and you're going to be stressed because of it. And same thing, I would have people come into the gym to sign up for training, and they literally in some cases would hand me their credit card and be like, just give me all the supplements I need. It's like, no, hold on. Like, how about we start with this? Let's get you into a sensible, long-term, maintainable exercise plan. Let's talk about making some better food choices. Maybe those better food choices include a quality protein powder so life's convenient. But let's talk about these other things later. Let's get you in here 3 days a week first.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Start with something small and just build up from there for sure.
Yeah, otherwise they fail. And that's, you know, nobody likes to play a game they can't win. And once they've failed enough, because you've given them 50 things to change in their life and they're 50 years old, they're just like, F this. Like, there's no, I can't do this. There's no way I could do this. Even along those lines. So first time I bought protein powder, bought my first pair of real Oakleys too, 1996. I paid like $300 for those Oakleys. I bought 2 tubs of protein powder at a GNC because the manager told me that if I took it and I didn't like it, he'd give me all my money back, even if I gave him the empty containers. And he showed me on the receipt in writing that that was the GNC policy. So I'm like, all right, I got nothing to lose. So I buy these 2 tubs, and the protein had creatine in it too, and we won't get into that. But so I bought them, took them, definitely noticed a huge change in my workouts. I was brand new to working out with weights. Run out, go back to buy more to a different store, talk to the manager there. I have my 2 tubs of protein, same stuff I just finished, chocolate. Set them up there. And the manager starts asking me questions, and I'm answering them. And he says, well, how many grams of protein are you getting? I said, well, I don't know. He said, well, what do you eat every day? So I told him I ate the same thing every day. And I tell him, and I was getting like, including the protein shake, I was getting like 90 grams of protein. Right? So he's like, you need to eat double that. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, you should be eating like almost double that. I'm like, oh, no way. He's like, yeah. So this is the overwhelming part. I was standing there looking at that. I'm like, well, there's no way I could double this. So I said, you know what? I'm not going to buy these. And I left.
Really?
Yeah. But that's what happens to the average person. And that's if you get bombarded with 50 pieces of good information on Franklin Strength's Instagram page, if you're overwhelmed, you'll be paralyzed. You'll quit. You'll stop. You'll say, forget it. There's no point in trying. I can't do this. Yeah, I literally looked at the fact that this guy's telling me I needed to get almost 200 grams of protein a day, and I was like, there's no way I could do that.
Yeah.
So I might as well not even try.
How old were you? You were in college then, right?
At that point, yeah, I was 22, 23 when that, it might have been 97 when that happened. I might have been 22, 23, 22 going on 23 or 23. But I had no, you know, I had no idea except, shoot, that's double. I can't do this. I'll fail. So I quit. But eventually I went back and bought those products again. I figured I could give it my best effort, add myself a can of tuna fish. Back when you got 6 ounces in a can, now you get 5.
Dave Draper style right there.
So I got that added another 32 grams. 2 cans of tuna was 64. Throw in another shake, I'm over 200 all day. I can do this.
Then you found Beverly Ultimate Muscle Protein and your life has been forever changed.
No, that didn't happen until like 2000, 2001. And back then it was Ultra Size, which they don't make anymore.
Yeah. They have delicious.
That's another whole conversation that I think it was Mad Cow Disease that put the last nail in the coffin of that. Because I had beef colostrum in it. Yeah, it sent it wasn't a health issue, it was a cost issue. It sent, like, they got rid of most of the beef or the cattle in Europe and whatnot. So it drove the cost of beef products to the moon. And it made the product wasn't going to be able to, like, the margins shrank or went completely. So anyways, yeah, they couldn't afford them to sell it to enough people. So
yeah, makes sense. Sorry to screw you up on that.
Yeah, so there you go. Yeah, I gave up. There's no way I could eat that much protein. I quit. Here you go. Yeah, I'm not buying it.
Well, I mean, I'm glad we talked about all this stuff today. And we went down a lot of different little rabbit holes. But like, dude, when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, like, people've got to be there. You know, they've got to be just on their toes, man, as far as like viewing social media. But, you know, being on a phone or in front of a screen all the time is terrible for people. It really is. Like, it does a lot to their psyche as far as their mental health goes. But then also, like, dude, sometimes it's just good to just log off, put your phone up, and just go outside and freaking get in the sun, man. And your life is probably going to be just as good, if not better. Because there's a whole hell of a lot less to worry about when you're outside and doing things that you enjoy.
Yeah, I think that's probably another missed opportunity is people are living through social media. They're living through a digital experience instead of going out and having the experience. And I'm not against screen time. Like, I argue with people about this all the time. I'm not against kids having mobile devices. And we're not going back to writing cursive, folks. We're certainly not going back to cave painting and hieroglyphics. All right, I got news for you. Like, that stuff's gone the way of the dodo. Like, we don't have magazines anymore. Like, it's not coming back. Screens are the future. But that being said, we shouldn't be trying to live through a digital experience. Like, go outside and experience it. You know, don't go and look at the videos of the mountains. Go to the mountains. Don't look at the videos of the beach, the river, or whatever. Go see those things and go, you know, don't just, and then when you're there, don't just spectate, participate.
Yeah, like this past weekend, me and my wife and kid, we went to this LIV golf tournament. Have you heard of LIV golf?
Yep.
So we went to this tournament. It was in the Grove here in College Grove. So just real close to our house. And we were watching Phil Mickelson play, my wife's all-time favorite golfer, right? He's awesome, right? Well, Uncle Phil. And we're watching him play, and he's about to stick a 15-foot, like, birdie putt, you know? And we are literally the only people around that green without their phones out video recording it. Sometimes there's a lot to say about someone like us in that scenario that can just be in the moment and experience it with their own eyes, you know? Because at the end of the day, it's like who gives a shit if you have it recorded on your phone? Like, dude, just experience it, man, and have it as a memory, right? And not worry about posting it on social media and just actually be able to, like, detach from your phone and live a life that you're going to remember and be thankfully lived.
Yeah, get out there and have the experience. And that's what gets, you know, that is what gets compromised and missed with technology, with social media, with devices, is you're not having the experience anymore. And it's, you know, watching recording it and watching it later because you were trying to make sure that Phil stayed in the shot on your phone isn't the same of actually watching him take the putt. It's different. And even, you know, even with kids, I'm almost 50 and like I can't do everything my kids do because they do gymnastics and that ship sailed. 20 years ago, my shoulder would allow me to do that. But that ship sailed without surgery, that ship sailed. But the other stuff, like I can run, I can jump, I can ride bikes, I can ride scooters. I can ride dirt bikes with my son. He's way faster than me, but unlike most parents that are just watching their kid do that, I get to go do it with them. It's that experience.
It's a big part of our lives. It's a big part of a lot of our lives. So I'm glad that we covered a lot of the things because it might open some people's eyes to some of the things that they need to be aware of now kind of moving forward.
This podcast is brought to you by smallbusinesstogrow.com, the website by entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs. Why reinvent the wheel? Start growing your business with best practices from industry-leading small business owners, executives, and entrepreneurs. Take their wheel, put it to work in your business, and start growing today. Smallbusinesstogrow.com to learn more.